Okay, Iran, are you ready?
Are you ready?
What makes you think I'm not?
Do you think I'm not ready? Why did you ask in the first place?
Should this be a special episode?
Is this an episode about questions? You are listening to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and role-playing gamers.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.
Hello and welcome to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and the people who play them. My name is Eran Aviram.
My name is Uri Lifshitz, hello.
And the reason I had to go through all of this so very quickly is because this is all a declaration, and declarations are not interesting. No, we are here to ask a question, aren't we, Uri?
Yes, aren't we?
Do we?
Should we?
Questions are very important. They can be used for, well, of course, to get information, but in role-playing games, we can use questions to actually create information. We can even use them to guide the story. We can even use them to guide ourselves, to make sure that we keep with the story, with the kind of tropes that we're planning for. And I would like to set the scene by turning to the questions that set the scene. You might have already heard about the famed 5 W's. Who, what, when, where, and why, which many journalists use in order to make sure that their article actually covers all of the important bits. In our case, these are all important bits when we start a scene, at least at the moment of the beginning, when we establish the scene. Everything then can, of course, change, but we always use scenes in role-playing games. And when we begin one, as the GM, you would usually answer these questions to the players. You will explain who is here, what is currently happening, what is the situation, when is it during the day, where this is taking place, of course, and why they are here. Some of these questions can be turned to the players, and that's the sort of thing that will happen a lot in games that are collaborative storytelling, like when you play City of Mist or Dungeon World or any of the Powered by the Apocalypse games. A lot of the time, when you roll the dice, you will get a question. The rules will point you at a question, and you will have to answer it, and by that, you will establish something about the scene. Again, those games also suggest starting the scenes by asking the players some of these questions, because when the answers are not vital to the story, there's no reason not to have the players answer them. I mean, for example, who is here? Well, Uri, you enter the pub. Who is here?
Well, I look around and maybe there's this tiny gnome in the corner with blue blazers looking at me.
That's weird because the pub is in London, 1980s, but sure, there's a tiny gnome.
maybe it's a garden gnome.
It might be a garden gnome. That's
how I imagine all British pubs, with garden gnomes everywhere.
What is happening? Well, the bartender is busy cleaning the pub, but that's not interesting. Let's enter the players and ask them. Uri, what is happening?
Well, two guys are about to start a fight off to the left-hand side. One of them just broke a beer bottle against the table.
Awesome. When this is happening? Well, of course, we can ask what's the time of day, but time of day is usually not very relevant or super interesting, and a lot of the time it will just be sometime later after the previous scene. But maybe you can ask something like, Uri, what is interesting about today? Is it a holiday? Is it a special day? Is it that one of the people are having their birthday? Are they out of stew today? What is unusual now?
Well, it's Queen's Day. Since we're in London, why not go with a holiday?
So it's a quiz day. They have a quiz night today, right now, right about now. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what the two are fighting about. Oh, interesting. Finally, where this is taking place, it's the pub. I said it so. I decided we go into the pub, sure. And we'll continue to, why are we here? And that is almost always answered by the players anyway, because the players are the one that decided to enter this scene. But not always. Not in 100% of the cases. And I think some of the coolest scenes one can begin sort of miss on some of these questions when you begin in medias res, for example, and you're not sure why we are here. That's pretty cool. When we are running away from the collapsing temple. Sure, but What? What temple? Where are we?
Let's just pause there and open this pop-up for some of our listeners. In medias res is the Latin for in the middle of things, meaning your story starts not in the beginning as one would expect, but rather in the middle of a happening.
Exactly. So once you are aware of these questions, and once you are aware that they should be answered, but not necessarily in the right order, not necessarily by yourself, not necessarily all at the same time, you can play with them. And that's important, and that's useful for everyone. There is, however, one question that I didn't mention, and that's how. How is a very important question. But most of the time, the answer is by playing the game. How are we going to solve this? How did we get here? Well, we just played. Sure, things happened. But
not necessarily. Sometimes you would finish a gaming session and you'll start off the next session by something like, well, 2 months have passed. What did you do?
That's interesting because I see how as important for timescaping as well, but on the other way around. Like, I think that how is the most important question for retro justification. It's when you look at something and you say, well, there's a cart here, and the cart is full of explosives. It's really important that it's here, and it's fun, and it's great. How did it get here? Not why. The answer to why is because that's going to make the scene awesome and excellent, and I really like it. That's the answer to why. But how did it get here? What is the event that happened before? Well, it's probably the king's birthday, and they are going to blow up some fireworks, and this is a cart full of fireworks. And now I have something interesting to go along with and continue to the next scene, where there's a ball. Ah, it's the ball for the king. Now everything clicks into place, because I retro-justify why everything is happening, because I now know how they came to be. That's my how. Finally, a few questions to think forward toward the future, toward where the story is going. These questions are the ones that I use to guide myself, and I ask them whenever something interesting or maybe not interesting enough is happening. I pause for a moment to ask myself these questions. It's not something vocal. I don't actually say them. I think them to myself. The first question is this getting us somewhere? I mean, is something happening? Are we having fun? Sure, but are we also like pushing the plot or a character art? Is something actually being propelled forward? Because if not, do we need this? Is this important? Do we need to have this scene? Do we need to have this conversation with this NPC? Can we maybe skip it? Can we maybe just turn it from an actual conversation around the table to saying, well, you talk to them and you decide that this and this and you continue on. And they tell you that this and this and continue on. I mean, do we actually need to now sit down and talk to the pub owner, or can I just tell them what the pub owner told them? Do we need now a conversational scene? Even if I feel myself, or even if the players already start talking in character, do we need this? Is it getting us somewhere? Because if not, maybe we should change something about it. Maybe we should make sure that it ends quickly so we can continue on, or maybe we should just do something else. Uri, what about you? What do you do with questions? A good question, isn't it?
It is. It's a very good question. I believe that questions are basically the most important tool that you can have as a GM, and one of the most important tools you can have as a player. And I'm going to take this, you know, questions is a big instrument, and you can do a lot with it. So I'm going to take this toolbox of questions, and I'm going to try to let our listeners get a sense of some of the main tools that I use questions for. Number one, and I think this is obvious, is guiding the plot. As a GM myself, most of the time, I use question as a sort of way to perform subtle guidance for my players. For example, if there's a door, my players are playing characters, they're in a hallway, there's a door, they're screaming come from the other side of the door. Now, notice the difference between the GM saying, there are screams from the other side of the door. What do you do? And do you continue down the corridor? Do you trace your step back? Or do you open the door? Or do you open the door? Or I can finish up with, does any one of you reach out and open the door. And I can even go the extra mile and ask my players, which one of you opens the door? Now, if you notice, every question in this series leave a little bit less room to maneuver. If I started with, well, what do you do? They could do everything. They could move forward, go back. They could lean against the wall. They could have a picnic, whatever. And my final question, which one of you opens the door? This requires everyone to actively saying, not me, in order for the door not to open. And this question is it's a very strong guiding point. Now, you can even go at this from a very roundabout way. You can ask, okay, which one of you is standing furthest away from the door? Now, this is a very nice question because it immediately implies that something's going to happen in the vicinity of the door.
Yes.
Or you're going to be attacked from a different direction. Either way, it immediately propels the idea of action into the minds of everyone involved. The idea of running away or avoiding the door is left a little bit on the outskirts. So as you can see, using question and very direct question about specific things can be a very powerful tool to redirect your player's attention. Now, you can hear a lot more about the concept of subtle railroading in the episode titled Subtle Railroading that is titled based on a workshop that I taught for the Adventure League's GM here in Israel. I'm a very firm believer that a subtle hand could guide a lot more firmly than an actual shove in the right direction.
I also want to add the very interesting question, what is your passive perception? Which is the question that tells the players something, first of all, mechanical is happening, something regarding the rules, and second, something orienting toward violence is probably happening as well. Now, maybe nothing of the sort is actually happening. You can use this question to make the players get into this mood, because that's what the question does. It's a question that turns a knob in the player's mind. It makes them think, I should pay attention. So even asking it just like whenever you want them to make sure that they pay attention, like in the middle of the ball, everyone is dancing, what's your passive perception? There's something I might miss. I don't want to miss it. I will now listen closely.
Now, this is also, and I'm moving to my second point, a great way to engage the players. I'm a huge fan of using my players for inspiration. I would often ask questions like, okay, what do you see inside the evil magician's room? Each player give me one object. And this is amazing because the synergy here is unbelievable. Players would give you inspiration to go to direction you would never think of because they're not you. This is also an excellent way of making the player feel like the world is also a bit theirs and they're also creating it with you. This could be also a very good opportunity for solving problems. But I remember, Eran, if you remember when we played years back and I was a rogue and Eran would never describe anything I could hide behind. Not because he was such a strict GM or he didn't want to give me that extra opportunity, because it's not something that was in his mind. And I remember I said, Eran, you asshole, I want to hide behind thing and backstab whoever's there. And Eran simply said, cool. So remind me in the beginning of every new scene to ask you to describe one single item in the room that you can hide behind. And we did that. And it was amazing because every room there was one thing which I added and it helped both mechanically and it enriched the world. Now, you can also use questions for character development in similar sense. And when I talk about character development, I mean questions that are meant to bring to the surface either emotion, thoughts, or memories of the characters. For example, I remember one time from one of my sessions, I said something along the line of, there is an aura of devilish fear surrounding the demon. You have not been so afraid since... when exactly? And I point at one of the players, and then that player would continue saying, oh, well, my character has not been so afraid ever since she was 4 years old and she fell down the well and there were bats everywhere and then she became Batman.
Batman.
And I would usually address such a question to one single character, one single player, make a note of it, and later I would select a different player to have a moment to describe something about his character which resonates with something that's happening in currently in the game. This is an excellent in-game mechanic to create what you would see in TV show as a flashback, for example.
Mm.
And I love those because they really bring out whatever the player sees in his mind when he thinks about the character. Which bring me to one of my favorite type of questions, and that is the open-ended question. There is an amazing difference between I look around the room for a secret doorway, do I find any? Or, I look around the room, what do I find? Now, this is a great tool for players, because open-ended questions will invite the GM to provide more information and potential helpful tidbits that we can use. This is, in my eyes, the equivalent of your character taking the time to really observe what's around it. And I'm just going to mention here that saying I look around the room for a secret doorway will get you a yes or no answer. It will not get you the answer of, oh, by the way, there is a chest under the bed with tons of gold pieces in it. On the other hand, I look around the room, what do I find? Will include everything in the room. So, why not? This is an excellent tool for the GM as well, as asking your players for anything with an open-ended question will invite them to add more details, enrich the world, enrich their character, and the game. And now moving on to something we call the chandelier rule. The chandelier rule is basically if the player asks, is there a chandelier in the room? You as a GM should probably say yes, because there's a reason why your player asks that question. They probably have an idea or a plan that is dependent on whether or not that object exists inside that room. And when I say chandelier, it's just because it's the classic, okay, is there a chandelier in the room? Yes. So I jump atop the chandelier and I pull it down with a swing of my sword and I crash land on all the guards, as has been done in every Robin Hood movie ever, by contract.
This is basically the other side of yes and. This is, there's a question and you reply by yes and then you continue.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and of course the yes ending here is very important, because is there a chandelier in the room? Yes. Is very nice. Is there a chandelier in the room? Yes, and there are a dozen white candles burning and lighting up the room. Finally, I would like to talk about feedback. Feedback is basically us as GM or players asking someone else to give us their opinion of what has happened. Now, remember that questions are a powerful way of communication in itself. Asking at the end of a session, okay guys, can you name one thing that you really enjoyed and one thing that they would like to see more of?
Mm.
Is an excellent way to get feedback. It's something that we in my improv troupe do at the end of every show. We sit in a circle and everyone say one thing that he really enjoyed, so that people will know, oh, that was cool, they enjoyed it, let's do more of that. And one thing they would like to see more. Would like to see more is an excellent phrasing, because it can either mean there was very little of that and I would like to see more, or it could also mean there was none of it and I really would like to see more of it. At the end of a session, a player saying, wow, I would like to see more car chase and explosions. Or, you know, the duel was excellent, I would like to see more duels like this in our game. It's a very non-offensive, open-minded way of letting other people know what you want. And it's all with, you know, a simple question. So take the time at the end of a session, be you players or GM, and ask and receive feedback.
Excellent. Uri, do you think we've answered all of the questions?
No, because there's endless amount of questions. But I do think we gave our listeners a bunch of ideas how to use questions in their game in a novel way.
There's nothing else to add then, and let us continue to take the load off.
This world is carried on the shoulders of the war.
This is the part of the show in which we talk about role-playing games in our own personal lives. And Uri, how about you begin?
Well, I had an excellent, excellent gaming session this week. And the reason I'm bringing it up is because it is very relevant for this episode. I started off the session with a round of questions.
Did you now?
I did. I don't usually do that. Usually I like to start off quick pace and then work my way onward. But this time I just, you know, took the time, did the round robin and asked, okay, so tell me what you did in the week that passed since the last gaming session. And, you know, the first player said, oh, no, we just stayed home and passed the time because she couldn't be bothered. And the other player said, I took my Fomorian familiar fishing. And I said, amazing, roll the die and see how many amazing items you found while fishing. She said, what? I said, yeah. She rolled a 3, and I gave her 3 magical items that the Fomorian simply fished out of the sea because she has this special connection with the river where they were fishing, and she simply found drowned items there. And everyone were like, what? Can you just get magic items by describing what you did in the last week?
Apparently.
And I said, well, she has the magic items. Moving on. What did you do? Well, I this is an experienced player, you can immediately tell, because I went around town and I met with all the wizards in town.
Sure.
And I said, well, cool. Most of them are out of town. You met 2 of them. One of them hates your guts. And the other one is the alchemist you've met in the previous adventure. And she gives you a whole bunch of magic brownies. Which is, at least by my definition, a magical item, is all I'm saying.
Okay.
You know, he wrote in his character sheet a box of magic brownies.
Sure.
So,
if it's on the character sheet, yeah, sure.
It's in his character sheet, you cannot argue. And the last one was, you know, really got the hang of it and said, well, okay, so I, in the store which I own, I host a Spider-Man convention.
Sure.
And I'm sure there's a Spider-Man convention in your place, and it became this major plot point later on when they met this former Knight of the Cross, which no one can convince to go outside of where he was, except her when she mentioned Spider-Man. He said, whoa, Spider-Man, I've been reading those comics when I was a child. He said, oh, there's a convention in my store. Would you like to come and see? And it was, okay. And, you know, all the thugs in town looking at her like, what? How did she get him to go when we all... Why? How? My point is that simply doing this round really enriched the world and the adventure. And more than that, I'm sure that it gave my players a lot of priming. So that next time I would ask them questions, they would make sure to answer and answer fully. Because the option of getting magical items simply by describing your character's actions in the past is too good to pass.
Indeed. Well, as for myself, I ran a paranoia game in Leisure Games during the Free RPG Day, but that's actually tomorrow from the day we're recording, so I don't know how it went. But I'm sure everyone died.
You don't know how it will have been going.
Thank you, Uri. The only thing I want to talk about then is the Annies. The Annie Awards are now looking for judges' nominations for 2020. Now, the Annies are pretty big. They are one of the basically only 2 big awards in the role-playing world. The other one is Origin, I think. And there's a problem with the way, I think it's a problem with the way that they choose both judges and topics and specific nominees. But if we put all of the problems aside, it is what it is. And this year, I mean, for 2019, there are 5 male judges. That's not a bad thing, but it's not a good thing, because I think there are a few women in the role-playing game world. And the main problem is that it's quite consistent that there are only male judges or only one. I think there was once there were 2 female judges, and it's not necessarily because of the way they choose them. It's also because there are very few female nominees. Last year, there were 18 nominees, and if I remember correctly, none of them were women. So if you, the person currently listening to us, feel you are underrepresented in the role-playing game world in general, I urge you to read the link that I'll put in the show notes or go to anyawards.com. There's a hyphen between any and awards. And read the guidelines for becoming a judge, because it's a pretty big thing. You need to read and listen to and browse through a lot of material when if you're chosen to be a judge. However, you get to listen to and read and browse through a lot of material if you get to be a judge. So it goes both ways. If you have the time, if you have the ability, and if you have the urge to influence the world and make it a better place, I would recommend you check it out and maybe become a judge and make me feel better about submitting my work there next year.
Hooray! Well, thank you all for listening to On the Shoulders of Dwarf. If you would like to contact us, we're available in email, Facebook, the Twitter, the other thing and places where you can find people on the internet.
Email us at show@dwarfcast.net with questions, topic suggestions, comments, anything that you would like us to know about, and check us our Patreon page at patreon.com/dwarfcast. Also, you can buy things through DriveThruRPG, through our affiliate link, which is on our website, which is dwarfcast.net. And that's it. I have nothing else to say to you.
Then don't say anything else ever.
Later!
On the Shoulders of Dwarves is shared under Creative Commons by attribution non-commercial 4. Intro and outro are by The Cliché Duo. And you can email us at show@dwarfcast.net.
On the shoulders of dwarves.